Good morning, good afternoon, Tails. Welcome back to the podcast. There is so much going on in the sporting world. After Australia's historic win in the first test at Edgbaston, all of a sudden we're on the eve of a Lord's Ashes test, the second test. The Women's Ashes is going off. Australia winning the first test there. There's Ashes everywhere, and also there's a lot of action in the AFL. What is going on with West Coast? Welcome, Tails.
Fanders, I thought you were going for a Truman Show intro there for a hot minute. But you're right. Yes, plenty has been going on. The greatest ODI that you never saw happened over the past 48 hours. Women's Ashes, though. We were sitting here when we looked at the fixture thinking, wow, you know, 8 days between men's Ashes tests. We're going to lose a bit of fears, a bit of buzz. No, no. Perfect replacement. Just pop a Women's Ashes in the middle of it. And it was a cracking test.
No sleep all around. It was an absolute ripper test in Australia getting over in the end. We're going to discuss all the action. As well, as you sort of said, Tails, we're going to make some comparisons between the West Coast Eagles and the West Indies cricket team. So, a bit happening in the West.
Yeah, we've worked very hard there, haven't we? Vanders, before we get into the men's Ashes, the women's Ashes across the last week, cracking test. Absolutely cracking test, which admittedly sometimes is rare for women's test matches. We'll get into that in a hot minute. But some of the highlights from this test, Elise Perry, 99, Annabelle Sutherland breaking through for her first test century, Tammy Beaumont getting the double century. And then admittedly, even though it was an off spinner, how good is it seeing a spinner bowling Australia home on the fifth day?
Exactly right, Tal. Some star performances all around. Ash Gardner taking 12 for the match in the ball, as you said, and bowling Australia home on the last day. Annabelle Sutherland with an impressive 137 not out as well in the first innings. She got with Elise Perry's agonising 99. So an absolute cracker game. And what about Beaumont for England's 200? What a spec. You don't often score a double 100 and lose the test match. So a little bit stiff there.
True, Vanders, absolutely. And it was actually quite an exciting test match. And it was one of those ones. Admittedly, once Australia took that fifth wicket heading into the final day, you thought, wow, this probably England don't have much of a tail. I think Kate Cross was in at seven, and Kate Cross at best is a number nine at best. So you knew that it was probably going to be wrapped up pretty quickly, but it was still great to see, as I said, a spinner bowling Australia home on the fifth day. It is rare to see a result in women's test cricket, and what I loved about this so much is that we got an amazing test. It went into the fifth day, and it justified to me that they should always play five-day tests. I know there's a reluctance because, particularly in women's tests, they don't have the pace or the bounce necessarily to make a lot happen. It's so hard to get batters out in women's long-form cricket that they don't always like to, it's a bit boring, blah, blah, blah. Don't worry about that. Forget that. Just keep at it. Keep at it. It'll come. And, that form of the game, the more they play, will catch up to ODIs and to T20s. So, yeah, really stoked that it was such a good test.
Yeah, you say, I mean, it's rare to get a result in test cricket, but it's also rare for there to be a women's test cricket match as well. And the Ashes,
exactly right.
For those that don't know, is a multi-format series. So they play one test match, and then which is worth, I think, four points. Yep. And then there's a bunch of ODIs and T20s, so short formats, which are worth 2 points each. So that's how it works with the Ashes, and it's just against England as well. So test matches are rare, and when you're sort of saying, just to go into that a little bit further about how results are sometimes rare, I think on pitches that don't have the best pace and bounce, it can be hard for the women's players who aren't as fast as the men and don't have the high release angle to sort of really put the batsman under the pressure, and you can end up having a lot of, it sort of really magnifies a dead pitch, if that makes sense. And so that's why sometimes the best women's Ashes games are at places like the Wacker, where there's extra pace and bounce. So, it was fantastic to see. And you can just see what it means to all of those women's players as well to be out there playing a test match. So that's really exciting. And Australia off to a great start, Tails.
That takes us to, Vanders, the men's Ashes. Been a heavy week off the field. I didn't think I'd be hearing about this much Ricky Ponting, but here we are. What did you make?
You were making a Johnny Bairstow joke there. Heavy off the field.
True. Walkabout pub 2013. But what have you made of the week off the field for the Ashes?
Not a lot's happened. There's been a lot of just Ollie Robinson chat as they're seems to now officially be his new enemy number one. Stuart Broad coming out and, of course, saying what? He's lost the mantle. He's a bit upset about it. But I think I'm surprised. I'm not surprised by the media getting caught up in it because they seem to love an Ashes villain. But I'm a little bit surprised the ex-Australian players coming out, Justin Langer, Matthew Hayden coming out, Michael Clarke coming out, yeah, and just piling on Ollie Robinson. And I mean, I just don't see the point really particularly. I mean, the only thing I think what Robinson said is a negative if it distracts him from his cricket and he isn't playing his best. But as far as chirping Usman Khawaja, I don't think anyone in the actual Australian camp is taking it seriously or is too worried. What was your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, you say the Australian camp. Ricky Ponting has been seen around the Australian camp. Ricky Ponting's had a very big week, which we'll get to in just a second. But, I'm the only thing I object to, I don't mind the banter and the Barney and whatever. I object to the way everybody is just discrediting Ollie Robinson as a cricketer. Yeah, look, he's fat and he bowls meds.
Which
you know, we all love piling on. Guy took 5 wickets on a flat pitch in Edgbaston, has an outstanding record.
He's the average is low 20s.
He's dangerous in England and bowled really well when he was out here, which people forget because he had to walk off a couple of times. But I just think that for everybody decrying his cricketing ability, that is a massive mistake because he is good. He is genuinely good and he will make an impact in this series, potentially at Lord's. But the other one to mention there is obviously Ricky Ponting. Firstly, Ricky Ponting getting into a war of words with Ollie Robinson, like, all right, mate, you gave the game up 15 years ago, whatever. Secondly, Vander's one of the most stunning revelations from Punter came out during the week. What did you make of him trying to claim that life could have been very different?
Well, yeah, he came out during the week and sort of mentioned that he was offered the English coaching role before Brendan McCullum. Now,
come on,
I didn't see the quote or hear the interview, so it's hard to tell. Anything you say during the Ashes is going to be hyped up by the media. He might have just mentioned that, yeah, he was in the running for the position. So I don't know if he was. I don't think he's the sort of person that'd be trying to slam Brendan McCullum. But certainly there's a bit of theatre going on. But I'm just a little bit over it and prefer, I guess, to see the cricket to the talking. Interesting. I'm just looking at Ollie Robinson. Thought he was a young man. Thought he was
not a young man.
Early 20s coming into his cricket. He's nearly 30.
What's going on?
He acts like he's like a spoiled. I don't mind him, but he does act like a spoiled teenager. So I'm surprised that he's that old. He looks like he's a little bit younger.
Don't start tipping into what everybody else did.
That. Well, I'm just upset that he's so old. I was hoping he was a young man. 29. Look,
the guy has 70 wickets at 20, and as a record, I don't know, what's he? Strike rate of 40 and an average of 18 at home. I'm just saying, can we wait until the third test before we start having a crack?
Yeah, wait till we're 2-0 up, exactly. Nice and safe. Well, hopefully he doesn't pull out a fifer at Lord's.
Vanders, now your pre-match prediction for the first test was a lot more accurate than mine. And as such, I will have to defer to you for the second test. Always the rumours of the Green Mamba. What is actually going to happen in this Lord's test?
Well, sources on the ground tales are telling me, and that's everyone in the media because the English cricket board put it out as a press conference. So Moeen Ali is out. I think probably concerns with his finger forced that change. And Josh Tung comes into the side. So not a name that we're familiar with that much over here.
Really roll off easily. What's he doing?
We'll roll off the tongue. Nice. Did take 566 on debut earlier this month against Ireland.
Ooh,
at Lords as well. So he's got a little bit of form.
Credentials.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, Fife is a Fife. He's on the board. He's on the Lords on a board. So you know, that's an interesting change. A change I think that it would have been forced by I think if Moeen Ali was fit, he would be playing is my best guess. And I think England have looked at the weather coming up and the pitch and thought, let's just play an extra seamer rather than trying to force a spinner. And hopefully Joe Root doesn't have to bowl too much. Have you had a look at the pitch yourself? There's been a few photos flying around on social media.
I can't look at the photos anymore because you know what it's like, Vanders. You get carried away. Mm. It's going to do everything
How many times have you seen the photo, whether it's at the Gabba or in New Zealand or England, where they're like, which one's the pitch? Yeah, two days before a test, and then, you know,
500 each first innings.
You end up batting first. So, I mean, it does look, it from the photos I've seen, get out, jump online and have a look at some of the photos. It does look green, and there is rain, sort of an overcast conditions for the day, a few days before the test, or has been before the test, and then also the first couple of days. So it may not harden up so much, but interesting to see what it might do, Tails.
But this is exactly what you called for, Vanders. You said that Bazball would be more effective on a raging seamer.
I think
we're going to get a test of that.
Well, I think it's true. I think, and they're saying the MCC pitch, the pitch at Lords, is the one that the English Cricket Board has least. The English Cricket Board will have the least say over because it's all separate and fancy and namby-pamby home of cricket or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But look, I think it will suit the English style, yeah, a little bit more. And it's going to mean, Tails, if it is green and seamy everywhere, they're going to really attack England go hard. They're going to attack everyone, but they're going to attack Nathan Lyon. So his role, as we discussed before the tournament, before the series, is going to be even more important in this condition, because they'll say, you know what, we can't hit Scotty Boland, we can't hit Hazelwood, so we're going after Nathan Lyon. So that's going to be a big story of the match. So I think it's going to be a fascinating game, and the weather and the pitch is going to be a lot of stories. And all of a sudden you forget 1-0 means absolutely nothing, because if England win at Lords, where they've got a terrible record, probably one of the worst records at home in cricket history, if they can win that and go 1-0, then they will, any momentum, they'll be absolutely in charge. So, like with Australia win, you can almost say game over for the Ashes. So this is almost, I'm calling it right now, winner of this test wins the series.
Well, you're right. We do have a great record at Lords. For mine, and we've talked about this, our opinions of Bazball fall exactly into who we are as people. I can barely see us winning another session. And you're far more balanced and nuanced than I am.
Yeah. I mean, I got carried away then saying if they win this, they win the series. But I struggle to see England winning. To win the Ashes, England have to win three of the remaining four tests. And I think they're going to struggle to beat Australia.
Okay.
Such a quality team three times. That's my read on it. Three out of four is a big ask. So that's my honest read. But whoever wins this will gain a huge amount of momentum.
All right. Prediction time then, Vanders. Who have you got?
I predict England coming back. I think they'll bowl first, and I think they'll roll Australia for 150, and then Australia just won't be able to get back in the game after that.
Good call. Player of the match?
Player of the match, I'm going to go James Anderson.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Pitchy likes, bit of confidence down the slope.
As we said last week on the pod, that gone under the radar, that he did not play well. Did not play well at all.
What about him saying if the pitch is flat, that's the end of his career? That's what I was saying. I was saying the same thing. But how about this? Sorry, I'm digressing. But the difference between Stokes saying they wanted flat pitches and then all the English bowlers saying they don't, what's the disconnect between the team there? It's a little bit off. It's a bit strange.
The baseball is already falling apart.
Yeah. Anyway, what's your prediction?
I do predict England to win, and it's going to be one batter that stands out and wins the game.
Ollie Pope.
I am going to say it is going to be Joe Root. Joe Root is going to be the player of the match.
Safe. Very safe.
It is very safe. It's very, to borrow a great cricketer term, it's very missionary sex, isn't it? To pick England at home.
That's you, though. That's you.
Yeah. Not as often as I'd like. West Coast, they are the biggest story in footy. You would have had possibly one of your best ever weekends on Saturday when you were watching Sydney dominate a pretty poor team. I don't think you cared. Having watched those grand finals in 05 and 06, you were absolutely happy to see West Coast being dominated.
I've said it all year, Tails. West Coast underrated. Underrated. Sydney did well.
Tell the whole story, did it?
No, look, I did enjoy watching it at the time, but as you reflect on it, you think, you know, wow, where to from here? I think it's five 100-point losses to West Coast this season and some big ones there as well. I mean, conceding 200 points is a massive concern, and their percentage is in the 40s, which is unheard of. You know, Gold Coast and GWS didn't have percentage in the 40s when they were first launched. So there's some real issues for the AFL here, because there's the actual integrity of the competition. Because if you're playing West Coast twice, that's a huge percentage boost as well.
I absolutely don't buy into it. Subscribe to that at all. Integrity of the competition. It's a 17-5 fixture split.
Okay, sorry.
Don't get me wrong. A lot of people are saying what you're saying. I just think there's so many other inequalities and inequities within this AFL fixture that I don't think you can...
Agreed that it's not equal, but do you add another one on? Like, is it... It's going to... Sorry, what I'm saying is the AFL will be concerned. They'd be to be concerned with what's happening. I heard commentary during the week that, you know, maybe people aren't as worried about West Coast, as it's such a great club with some great history, and maybe, you know, they're not as stressed out as maybe they need to be. If this was happening to the Gold Coast or anyone else, you know, there'd be a lot of action being taken by the AFL, but at the moment they're... There really isn't too much. And there's not much that West Coast can do. They sort of, they doubled down after winning the premiership in 2018, trying to chase the second premiership. And now they're paying a lot of money for players that are cooked and injured and too old. And they don't have much trade bait. And it's going to be a long haul, Tails.
Well, exactly. You're exactly, hit the nail on the head there, Vanders. What do you do next? So everyone's saying, oh, you got to trade their players. Well, who would you legitimately, as a Sydney guy, as a team that will have probably a top five pick at the end of the season, who would you actually trade for?
Yeah, I think it's going to be trying to take their youngsters, to be honest, trying to find some young talent. And that's the concern, is people leaving because they're not winning games.
But there's just I don't understand who actually has any form of currency. Like, people say, oh, you got to get off Andrew Gaff's contract. Great. Who's going to take that on for Andrew Gaff? Like, Andrew Gaff isn't changing your team. Jeremy McGovern won't leave. No, he's not leaving anytime soon. Elliot Yeo's name keeps getting thrown up. He's out for another month.
Yeah, no one's taking him. Unless it's for free.
There's the players that everybody seems to think are available just don't have any form of currency. So no, I don't think they can trade their way out of it. The other thing I think to think of as well, everyone says, oh, you've got to sack the coach. Like, he's the one to do it. You've got to sack Simpson. Well, it's going to cost him $7 million to do it. Because of the way his deal structured, yeah, maybe they shouldn't have done that. But $7 million in this economy, I know West Coast can afford it. There is no way that it's in any way responsible or even just good optics to sack someone and have to pay them another $7 million. Can't be done.
Yeah, what's in it for him? Is it just the money for him now staying? Because you're going to say his reputation, he's not getting much out of it. He looks like a defeated man.
Well, yeah, but like, I'm a defeated man at my job. I still stay. Like, well, why do we blame him for staying?
But he could probably get a job somewhere else.
Oh, can he? On that sort of cash?
Well, not if he keeps staying. Not if he stays for too much longer. No, I just wonder. I agree with you. I don't think kicking the coach out is going to solve anything. But at some point, if these defeats keep happening, a lot of players, ex-West Coast, Chad Wellingham during the week said he would have said, no, stand by the coach. But he said after conceding 200 points, he just doesn't see another option. So, you know, at some point, even if it's the wrong decision, it sort of needs to be made because it's not working. But you sort of hope that... You don't want to see an AFL. Like, yeah, we all enjoy seeing some clubs lose for a while, Collingwood, other examples, but you don't want to see a club really in the doldrums for too many years with no hope for the future. And right now, West Coast looks like it's going to be at least two or three more years of pain. I reckon next year is going to be worse at this current rate. I was during the week, we were doing some planning, and I decided that I would quiz you. It was my turn to quiz you, which may or may not be true, but anyway, I got in first. So I'm going to give you a bit of a tough question here. It's about the final, who's going to be playing finals. Now, the top of the AFL ladder, the top four, seems to be fairly set at the moment, with Port Adelaide, Collingwood, Brisbane and Melbourne in some sort of order in the top four. But then it drops away a little bit. And it's quite close. So I want to put you on the spot and say, who do you think is going to finish between 5 and 14?
How long have I got, Vanders? Do I have to reason through this?
Or do I have a minute. You got a minute. So some reasons, and I'll have some follow-up questions.
Rightio. Let me see who I've got here. All right. Put me under the pump. All right. All right. We're ready?
Yep. Go.
All right. The Bulldogs, I've got finishing fifth. I have no real good reason for that other than they have some reasonable players. And I think that all their better players haven't been in great form with the exception of Marcus Bontempelli. So I think they're going to get it together. They're going to finish fifth. Geelong are going to finish sixth. I did predict at the start of the season that they would not make finals. Unfortunately, I think that's not going to come true. I still don't believe in them. I still don't think they have any good players, but they're going to finish sixth. St Kilda, they will find their mojo again. They will finish seventh. They are making the eight. I know they've been patchy the last 10 weeks. Doesn't matter. They've got enough of a head start. They're fine. The eighth team will be Adelaide. Adelaide are playing enough competitive footy. Yes, I know they've got some tough matches coming up, but they are competitive. They're young, and I think they'll still make the eight. Fremantle will miss just on percentage. Essendon won't get there, but that's no surprise. Honestly, I'm surprised they haven't won the Wooden Spoon. Richmond won't make it either. They're no good. They're done. They're cooked. The Suns and the Giants, why don't they just merge? Honestly, they're just wasting our time. Carlton will string a couple of wins together. Vossi will keep his job. And everyone will look to the future and think they'll actually make top four next year. And Sydney will have the number four pick, despite the fact they were grand finalists last year. Honestly, it's unfair. If I didn't know better, I would say this is another example of Sydney gaming the competition. Get rid of their cola. Cut their bloody soft.
This is
another example of them stretching the rules.
If you're going to finish outside the eight, you may as well get a good pick. Great. Well, look, Taylor, not too many follow-up on that. I do think that Adelaide are going to miss. They've got some tough games. They've got games away against three of the top four. We'll have, you know, they've got the showdown against Port, and then they've got Melbourne away and Brisbane away too. So I think Adelaide will miss.
Yep.
And I think it'll be Geelong to come in for them. But I think Essendon will make it as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Purely
what? So just Geelong Adelaide swap for mine at the moment.
Interesting. No, I do like that. I like the stability. So you're sticking with the Saints?
I don't like it. I don't want the Saints in. I think they'll fall out, but I can't see anyone to replace them. It's not going to be Gold Coast. It's not going to be Freer. The only one that could maybe get there and it would be from downtown, but the only one that have the capabilities and the talent is maybe Richmond.
Well, Vanders, those are our top eight predictions. Don't forget, you can hit us up at any time on Twitter. Tell us your top eight predictions. Tell us why Vanders is wrong and I am right. That's all I want that account to be used for, is just pointing out the times that I am correct.
I was on a side note for our Twitter account and our podcast. There's some disinformation laws came in Australia recently that includes podcasts and social media accounts. So we need to make sure that we're not lying, defamation.
I don't think we've ever done any of that.
It would be good to see some Ollie Robinson hate appearing on the Twitter account this week. Good way to get followers.
That is On the Outside for another week. Strap yourself in. Keep watching the cricket. Keep watching the footy. We're almost there for Tour de France time, which I know you're pumped for as well, Vanders. Can't wait for our bonus Tour de France pod. But
yeah, absolutely, Tails. It's going to be a stressful few days watching this green-seeming mumba at Lourdes. So I'll be needing all the emotional support I can get.
I won't be here for you, Vanders. On that note, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.